Morning, or good afternoon, depending on where you're from. Welcome to today's webinar. Thank you for joining very much. Today, we're lucky to speak with our guest, John Blankensop, who's been in attendance to this webinar several times before. Today, we're going to speak about embedding excellence across the enterprise. John Blankensop has a wealth of experience in quality management. He's been in the field now for over 40 years and had a variety of different roles. So he's a great guest to have as he can speak to the topic of quality with a lot of experience and from multiple perspectives. John's the author of the Big Q University channel on YouTube. He's a senior member of the American Society for Quality. He's a certified manager of quality and organizational excellence. He has a raft of other certifications, we're happy to have him here. So welcome, John.
Thank you. Good to be here, Nils. Thank you.
Our webinar will last between 45 minutes and an hour. It is being recorded, so we will send all the attendees a recording afterwards. If you'd like to ask any questions during the webinar, please do so in the public chat. I'll keep an eye on those and try and answer them in the right order as they come in. So please keep it lively. That's usually the best way to get the most value out of these webinars is when there's a lot of interaction. So I'd like to start by asking everyone who's on to put in the chat facility where you're from. And then if you would also one or two words on what drove you to register for this webinar. What in particular are you interested to hear? As those roll in, we'll try and process them and incorporate them in the webinar as we go. I'd also like to share that this is the first of two webinars. So today's session with John will focus on sort of John's approach to embedding excellence across the organization. It's sort of like a paradigm shift within the quality management realm. Today, we'll focus on more of the business aspects of that transformation. In our next quality talk, we'll also invite a technology expert and focus more on the role of technology in such a transformation. I see the hellos rolling in. I see Blake from Houston. He's interested in Big Q. Paul from the Netherlands, a food safety coordinator. All right, love to see how to achieve best results. Alito, working on culture change, always an interesting topic, culture change. I think we're about due for another revisit of the role of culture in quality. And John from Ohio, refresher of TQM as I implement ISO 9001, 30 years of experience. Welcome, John. Mm. All right. Well, that's excellent. So I'd like to jump right in. So as I said in the introduction, today we're going to talk about a very foundational transformation that can occur within the quality management domain, and according to you, John, should occur. And it's this idea of embedding excellence throughout the organization, right, rather than centralizing authority and responsibility of quality in a particular department. Now, I know there's much more involved, but what I'd like to ask you is, could you start by just summarizing your thesis, if you will, and making it clear to everyone what we're going to discuss today?
Yeah, sure. Welcome, everybody. It's sure great to be back. This is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. This idea of embedding quality management or total quality management, or what I refer to as Big Q quality, which comes from Dr. Duran. This whole idea of embedding quality management is something that involves, for me, six success factors that I like to talk about. The first success factor is creating alignment with organizations' cultural aspirations, its unity of purpose and direction. So alignment is very critical in embedding quality management or big Q quality in the organization. No more off-the-shelf quality management systems. These quality management systems are very unique to a particular organization. I like to refer to them as fingerprints. No two should be alike, because a quality management system should align with the uniqueness of an organization. The second thing as a success factor is effectively integrating quality management principles, processes, and requirements. This integration is key. This is what Duran was talking about with Big Q quality. And the phrase that I use is quality is not responsible for quality. And this always turns people's heads, right? Quality doesn't own quality management. Quality management is owned throughout the organization. So this idea of integration. Then there's interconnection. Establishing interconnections of processes is very key and critical. I've seen organizations attempt to embed quality, integrate quality, but they lack the process interconnections. Then the arrangement and management of these processes through their interactions. How do you manage the interactions between processes? That's critical. Then embedding quality data analytics within these processes, right? Too many organizations have their data analytics in one central area. They put together these impressive PowerPoint presentations that get looked at maybe monthly, but they're not embedded down into the business processes of the organization. And then lastly is fully optimizing the quality management system, understanding how to continually optimize the system. So those to me are the six success factors, which really are the six areas that I've seen over the years where organizations are failing. Why quality management doesn't work is because of these six areas.
Excellent. Thanks for that, John. So these six areas: alignment, integration, interconnections, interactions, embedded analytics, and optimization. What shall we focus on today?
I'd like to focus on the first three. I think that would be a good chunk for us to bite off. And then maybe in the next session that we have, which is going to be a little bit more technical in nature, because now we're going to start diving into analytics and measures and optimization. Maybe we save that for the next talk.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, so before we dive into those three areas, let's take one step back again and explain to us, why do you think historically the quality management domain has grown in the way that it has, where there's a centralized quality function and department? I mean, why didn't we evolve naturally into the way of working that you're going to explain to us?
Well, I can share my perspective. And this is a 43-year perspective. So when I jumped into this back in the early 80s, it was prior to ISO 9001. I was in aerospace defense. We were using a quality program standard called MIL-Q 9858. Now, TQM was big in the 80s, so there was a lot of buzz about TQM. But then ISO 9001 came on the scene, and I think that was a pivotal time, and I think we lost an opportunity there. To me, what happened was the industry that created around ISO 9001, where we started with certifying bodies, or back then we called them registrars, and auditors, and learning to implement a quality management system into an organization. We didn't take a process approach. We took a clause approach. We implemented clauses. We created quality manuals that sat on shelves in quality managers' offices. The business was ran over here, and then quality management was over here. And it was a whole cottage industry of consultants that, keep in mind, in the 80s, we didn't have laptop computers or personal computers. They were just starting to come on the scene. So as soon as they did, we were starting to build these programs where I could type in your company name and I could spit you out a quality manual and we could get you certified in a month, mm-hmm. right? There was a lot of that going on.
Right.
And I still see it today where auditors want you to build a quality management system that's easy for them to audit. Mm-hmm. Clause by clause by clause, but that's not how we run businesses, right? The requirements of quality management should disappear within the business processes. And yeah, it might be hard for an auditor to manage or to audit that, but that's their job. Their job is to dig into the business processes mm-hmm. and audit that. So right. anyone going through ISO 9000 or any other industry equivalent implementation, don't be clause-based in your approach to it. You've got to be process-based.
Great. I appreciate that. That's great. So tell us about the why. Why should we do this, sir? And maybe start, please, with the negative. Like, what happens if we don't change? So tell me some of the impacts that you foresee if we don't make this shift.
Well, I'll tell you, if anyone's been following the news and they followed the Boeing commercial situation mm-hmm. and the breakdown in quality, that's an example of what can happen when you don't, right? Quality was definitely not embedded throughout all of the business processes, and it created an issue, right? So you expose the organization to a great risk, product liability risk, customer satisfaction risk, business risk, by not effectively building a quality management system that is embedded and integrated into the business. So we used to have a saying, pass the audit, fail the company, right? You can build a quality management system that passes an audit, an ISO audit, but it fails the organization. You don't want to be in that position where you pass an audit, but fail the organization.
Right.
And that's the consequence. That's what you don't want. You want a system that the organization uses to drive its excellence.
Okay. All right. Well, so let's go one level deeper now. So let's get into this framework of these six dimensions and, start to peel the onion for us, please. So
right.
How does this work?
Well, to me, the very first thing that you have to understand is the alignment that you create when you're going to embed quality into an organization or create a quality management system. And that alignment is unique to the context of that organization. You have to really think through and understand what are the cultural aspirations of the organization. If one of the cultural aspirations is to be a customer-focused organization, well, then you better make sure that you align your quality management system to support that, to actualize that aspiration, right? Let's say you have a goal or a purpose of zero defects to the customer. Well, you need to create a quality management system that aligns with that, that actualizes that aspiration, right? So too many times, when I'm auditing organizations, the first people I audit is top management, and I talk about what are their quality cultural aspirations, expectations. And I get these fancy PowerPoint presentations and all these great words and great strategic plans. And then I go down on the shop floor and I'm auditing the work being done, talking to the people executing, and their approach, the way they're actualizing, the way they're executing, is not in alignment with all those aspirations that top management had spoke to me about. And to me, that's an indication of a system that gets implemented in a way that is not in alignment with the aspirations of the organization. The other thing is you need to have alignment with all of your relevant interested parties and what their expectations of the quality management system is. We're not building a quality management system or embedding it in the organization to serve us. We're doing it to also serve all of the interested parties relative to the quality management system. And then the other thing is your quality management system needs to address the strengths and the weaknesses and the opportunities and the threats that your organization is facing. So you can leverage what you're strong at and what opportunities exist, and you can manage risks relative to weaknesses that you understand that you have as an organization and the threats that you see externally to the organization. So there's a lot that goes into it. You don't blindly just implement a system. You have to really understand this alignment that you're trying to create.
Appreciate that. So there's a couple of questions that have been coming in about senior level buy-in, executive level support, culture. Talk to us, John, about, you know, the importance of that. I think we all intuitively understand or have experienced that, but also, how do you go about achieving that? Like, what's the way to get senior level management to buy in?
Yeah. So for me, the first step is awareness, communication, and training. I mean, you have to start with helping them understand this idea of big Q quality management. And you can't assume because they've risen to a position of top leadership within an organization that they really understand quality management, because in most cases they don't. The one thing I will say is that in all my years of doing this, I have never met a business leader that wants to come to work every day and purposely tank quality in their organization, right? I've never met one like that. But I have met several leaders that are absolutely clueless about what quality management is, right? And I think that's what we've got to do to start with this buy-in for quality. Now, I know a lot of people talk about the only language they listen to is the language of dollars and cents. Now, I believe that's true. I think eventually you need to talk dollars and cents. You need to help them understand the big Q cost of quality dynamic. But I think before you try to hit them up with the dollars and cents, you need to introduce them to the ideas of big Q quality. You need to help them understand what does that mean? What does that look like? And then from there, you know, you start to introduce them to the value proposition. This is what this means. We could literally reduce our total cost of quality by 50% in the organization if we shifted from being a reactive organization to a proactive and preventive organization. And then you start diving into that.
Right. Right.
But if they don't, if you don't get their belief system to shift, it's not going to happen. It won't happen.
Excellent. Okay. So speaking their language is a key part of it, right? Education is a key part of it. And, you know, ultimately showing that quality is a means to an end, to a business end, right? And by translating it in those terms, you know, you can garner buy-in. There's an interesting question here about benchmarking progress, right? I think a fundamental complexity that we deal with and everybody deals with in quality management is that a lot of what we do has an indirect impact on business drivers, right? So ultimately, right, it leads to cost reduction, quality improvement, risk reduction, you know, bigger top line, more profit, all those things. But making that translation is difficult. It's not always straightforward to see that, right? A lot of times quality is seen as a cost center. Paul is asking a question here about how to go about benchmarking progress, because in particular, he's saying food safety doesn't have concrete deadlines like a machine that is not running. So he's in a position where he knows he's adding value. He knows it's important, but he needs to sort of make it real for the people around him.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. One of the elements to me of effective quality management is being performance proven, right? So you don't build a quality management system for the sake of a quality management system. It's to result in achieving performance that you're targeting to achieve. And so that's a big part of, you know, when I talk about managing interactions between processes, when I talk about embedding mm-hmm. quality data analytics and optimizing a quality management system, I'm talking about optimizing the performance of a quality management system. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you have an existing quality management system that you think is embedded within the organization, or that's what you're trying to do, you really need to look at the metrics, the analytics and the metrics that you've established for that quality management system. It really should start at a high level where you've developed objectives for the system. What do you expect the system to achieve? What are the high level objectives? And then as you break down into the key processes of the organization, each of those key processes should have a set of KPIs that they are driving to drive their process in a way that all of those processes are aimed towards the objectives of the organization as a whole. And there should be a system in place that allows you to easily see that. So you can see where you're hitting your overall objectives as an organization, and you can see where your key processes are performing and which one of those may have an impact on the overall performance of the business. Now, benchmarking, if you are embarking upon making a significant change in a quality management system, you could benchmark by creating jumping off points of historical performance. This is where we've been performing. This is where we'd like to be performing. Here's the changes we're going to make to try to achieve that, right? Because what we say is if you keep doing what you've been doing, you'll keep getting what you've been getting.
Right.
And if you want to get something that you've never gotten before, you're going to have to do something that you've never done before. There's just no way of getting around that. So if you're performing at a certain level and you're trying to get to the next level, you're going to systemically have to do something different to get you to that next level. When he talked about, sounded like he was very granular talking about machine performance, maybe. I mean, that now you're diving down into a particular process area, and then what measures are in these areas relative to machine performance. But in the end, it's all about performance. It's all about, are we moving the needle? What needles are we moving when it comes to quality management, improving quality management? In my opinion, there should be no ambiguity about the value of quality management in an organization. It should slap you in the face. It should be very apparent. It's like, okay, here's what we're getting for this embedded quality management system that we have.
Right. Well, perfect. I think, yeah, so I'm putting myself in Paul's shoes, and Paul, feel free to sort of tag on a following question, but Paul's in food safety, and I think part of the challenge there is having to prove a negative, right? You're trying to prevent, food safety issues from happening. So, you know, he's looking for tangible KPIs, I think, that could prove his value. Let's take this. So a few more questions rolling in, and I'll get to those in a minute. But I want to get back to the main track, right? John, you mentioned alignment, integration, interconnections as sort of key focus areas. Okay, so let's assume now that we're in an organization that has a little Q mindset. We've gone through with all the consequences that follow from that, right? High cost of quality, underperforming on the business side, right? Overall costs are high, profits are low, reputation is mid, you know. So somehow the you have convinced senior leadership that a transformation is long overdue, and we want to now embed excellence across the organization. We want to get away from this old model that doesn't work, right, of centralizing quality responsibilities and we want to actually do a good job of driving excellence broadly within the organization. How do we proceed? All right, we have the green light right now. Like, how do we actually do this? Where would you start?
Well, I'd start with alignment. So if we work our way through alignment, there's tools that you can use for that. SWOT analysis is a great tool to understand that alignment. If we move from alignment, then you move into integration. And integration is the idea of taking quality practices, principles, processes, and requirements and integrating them into the organization. And the saying I have, which you used as the tagline in this presentation, is that quality management is not a swim lane. Mm-hmm. Quality management is the whole swimming pool, right? So you've got to help people understand that. That's why I say quality is not responsible for quality. When you integrate the requirements of quality, the principles and practices of quality in the key business processes, then those process owners now own the responsibility for quality management within their processes. So if I use the swimming pool analogy, instead of quality management being a swim lane, I see six swim lanes in this swimming pool. The first swim lane is organizational quality management. This is leadership processes. This is where we create unity of purpose and direction, quality objectives, quality policy. This is where we have oversight and control of the quality management system as a whole. Next, I see after organizational quality management is customer requirements quality management. And this is where we manage the review and understanding of customers' requirements and how we flow them down through operational planning and control within an organization. Right. That to me is the second swim lane. The third swim lane is quality management within product or service design. So designing product or services and the quality management principles involved in that. And then the next swim lane, the fourth swim lane, is supplier quality management and the requirements for managing the supply chain. And then the fifth one is production process quality management, the requirements for managing the processes to produce the service or the item. And then the sixth one is customer satisfaction or customer support quality management. And this is post-delivery support. How do we support the customer post-delivery, right? And as I'm progressing down these swim lanes, I'm progressing through three phases: quality planning phase, quality control phase, and a quality improvement phase. All right. So when I think about integration, I'm integrating in a swim lane in three phases. And if I take those swim lanes and I make them columns in a spreadsheet, and I take those three phases and I make them rows in a spreadsheet, I now have created 18 interconnections or 18 cells where I can specifically integrate processes and requirements. Every one of those 18 interconnections, I can associate an ISO 9001 clause to. So now what you're doing is you are integrating the requirements of ISO 9001 into one of those 18. As an example, supplier quality management, planning, supplier quality management control, supplier quality management improvement. There are requirements for each one of those activities. And so if I have these 18 building blocks, I can use them as a means to monitor my progress in implementing quality requirements into those. Each swim lane has to have a swimmer. That swimmer is the process owner. That process owner, let's say for supplier quality management, could be the vice president of supply chain management. They now own the requirements for quality management and supply chain. Right. Or let's say the vice president of design. They now own that. And the quality organization or the quality function is supporting everywhere in that system. That is the idea of integrating quality requirements into the organization. You have to see it almost like in that matrix kind right. of mindset.
Yeah. Tell us about these projects, John. How long do they take? How many people are involved? What are kind of the kind of make it real for us? If you're now in charge of this transformation, you know, what are you asking leadership for actually? What are the resources and sort of buy-in that you're concretely asking for? A year, half a year? Do you need a lot of budget or is this something that can be done sort of within the existing budgets? Or tell us about that.
Right. So first of all, I'm going to give you a real life example of something that I went through in my career. So the first thing I did is I worked through top leadership. We did some training, helped them understand this idea of Big Q quality, helped them understand what their roles and responsibilities were in a quality management system, and then convened a steering committee that would help to implement the requirements. The very first thing we did is we stopped calling what we were doing as the ISO system. It became the company system. So that word disappeared immediately. And I started working with each one of the process owners to implement, integrate quality management requirements into their processes. And if their processes were not well defined, then we started to define what their processes were and integrated the requirements into those processes. And then at some point, I had to merge all of them together because that the next element is interconnection of the processes. So I had to help them understand how outputs of some of their processes became inputs into others' processes. And now we started to interconnect these processes so that they understood how they worked horizontally across an organization, not vertically in their silos. And that's a very difficult thing to get over because they're very used to running their departments with their org chart in a silo, not as a value stream that cuts across multiple departments as it goes from customer requirements to shipping product or delivering services to a customer. And so that includes developing metrics and measures, measuring outputs that meet the expectations of the input receiver, what they expect. So, you know, requirements from the design people over to the supplier quality, supply chain people, or the requirements from customer requirements people down to the shop floor. There's these interactions that you have to manage. And so, in my opinion, it's probably a one-year process. And then if you're going for certification, you're going to tag another 3 to 6 months of demonstrated performance so that you have objective evidence of conforming to your system before you call in auditors to audit you for certification. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can be a year to a year and a half to 2 years total from start to finish.
Right, right. Perfect. And tell us from some of these real life examples what the outcomes were. Like, you know, why are, we talked a little bit about why we should do this. So sort of juxtapose the old situation from the new to the new situation after going through a transformation like this.
Yeah.
In terms of business impact.
Yeah. So a real good example would be the management review process. So many of the participants probably have lived the horror of having to own the management review process, putting together a slide deck that covered all of the input requirements of ISO 9001 and make this presentation to a room full of leaders, half of which are falling asleep. And you as the quality leader are trying to drive this when everyone else is barely participating, right? And in the end, you really didn't accomplish anything. You really tangibly didn't determine if the quality management system is truly adding value to the organization, right? Now, contrast that with a management review process that's led by the leader of the organization, not by quality. Quality helps facilitate it. And each of the process owners, each of those six swim lanes, they come to the table to talk about their process and to talk about the performance of their process and where their performance is to targeted expectations. And if those targets aren't being met, what actions they're taking within their process to meet the targets for those measures. It's a very productive, it's a very honest kind of meeting. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to call amen or BS mm-hmm. on each other. Like, no, right. You know, you're killing us.
Right.
Right. It's a very healthy dialogue with the idea of understanding if the quality management system and these core processes are producing the performance levels that are required for the organization right. to succeed.
Right.
So a very yeah. different environment.
It's a more relevant conversation, right? You're talking about things that actually matter. Everybody feels like it matters. You feel like we've all been in management reviews that feel like you're just kind of going through slides and you don't really understand, you know, what the value is of being there. So that's a good example, John.
Yeah. There's a high level of accountability. People stand behind their process. They know they're supposed to deliver. And if they don't deliver, no excuses. They work through a root cause analysis and have a recovery plan. Say, all right, we're going to get better on this. We're going to work this out.
Just to sort of finish this one off, John asked the question of what are the most valuable top level objectives that should be measured in a management review? So can you give some real examples?
Yeah. I mean, so what should be, discussed in management review are the objectives that are established for the quality management system. And ISO 9001 requires that to be maintained documented information, which means there should be a document that declares what these objectives are, right? And these objectives should be, they should pass the SMART test, right? So they should be specific. They should be measurable, achievable, relevant and time bound. And so those are what you're going to review at the quality management review, along with the core processes and what their KPIs are that support the objectives. And so at an organizational level, you're obviously going to have objectives around the level of conformity of the product or the service that you provide. So you're going to look at that overall performance to your customer. And there's a lot of different ways to measure that. First time quality. I created a measure at one of the companies I worked at, which was the number of line items that we ship that are defect free or complaint free. So we did not hear anything, a complaint or a product defect about that line item that was shipped. And that was revolutionary for that company because before they were just measuring product PPM discrepant, you know, PPM versus complaints and product issues. So if we shipped it to the wrong location, that was a complaint that hit that line item. So that was, you know, that was a conformity. On-time delivery is still, you know, a great indicator if the process is working properly. And then you start to get into cost of quality or the cost of poor quality as objectives at a high level, understanding that, rework, scrap, repair. So, I mean, those are some of the key ones that come to my mind. Internal quality, maybe it's defect rate. I'm always trying to reconcile internal quality performance with external quality performance, right? Let's say internal quality performance is stellar and external quality performance is terrible. What's that going to tell us, right? We're not catching it internally.
Right.
So as I catch it internally, my external performance starts to improve. My internal performance starts to get worse because now I'm capturing it, but now I've got to learn how to prevent it from recurring. And then eventually my internal performance starts to improve. So you constantly want to be reconciling quality performance internally, quality performance externally from a customer's perspective.
That's a great example. John, I hope that answered your question. If not, feel free to tag some questions on. So, John, what are some common pitfalls that occur when you're going through this transformation? Talk to us about some typical problems and how you avoid them or mitigate them.
Well, you know, the first one that comes to mind is that leadership really doesn't step up. You know, they don't step up culturally and own the effectiveness of the quality management system. They still think the quality department owns quality management. So there's this constant constantly trying to reinforce this idea. And the better you can build a system to help reinforce that, the more that that can be reinforced. The system has got to clearly show who owns the system as a whole and who owns the key processes that drives the system, that core value stream. Right. So that's a pitfall that you just have to constantly work with relative to the ideas of what Big Q quality is and that shift in mindset.
Right.
I think the second one is the integration piece that I talked about, not really effectively integrating the requirements for quality into a business process. And so it kind of gets stuck out there where nobody is owning it and it's not getting accomplished. So really mapping those out and assigning them to processes is really critical. We use a tool on the aerospace side called a QMS process matrix. And so we list all of the clauses down one column, and then across the other columns are all of the high-level processes in our quality management system, and we associate the clause with the process. So we're constantly assigning what we call the provision for conformity to a process. And so when you're done with this, you have it completely mapped out. You know what process owns or accountable for what clauses in the standard.
And could you do you think you could give an example of a non-integrated, you know, situation and what the impact could be?
Yeah, let's say a real common one would be in the area of production processes, right? Mm-hmm. So we are in production on a particular item. We are producing the item. We did not effectively integrate quality planning, into the item. So, we didn't do advanced product quality. We didn't try to predict what could potentially go wrong. We didn't try to mitigate risk. We released it to the floor. We're operating it. And from a control standpoint, we simply just have inspection inspecting it. So we're the quality department is required to inspect the output of this product, and it ships to a customer, and we have a discrepancy, and the customer complains and is going to return the product. All right. The first thing top management does is they call the quality department and say, how did you let that happen? Right. And what are you going to do to fix that? Well, the reality is the quality department didn't create that defect. The process owner in that process group created that defect through the way they developed and released that production process. They didn't use quality planning tools or techniques. And so now you're being faced with having to intervene into this process, understand what was the root cause of it, and then take action to correct it when you don't own any of the resources to make any of those changes in the process.
Right.
And you've got a production group that says, no, we're just going to keep doing the way we've been doing
right.
it.
Right.
Just keep inspecting it.
So now give that example. What would that look like in an organization where excellence is embedded in the swim lane? So how would that work?
Yeah. So the way that works is that an organization sees from a total cost of quality model that they spend more money on preventive quality. And they do that by hiring process and manufacturing engineers that have quality planning backgrounds and know how to execute advanced product quality planning techniques, so that as they're designing a process, they are designing it quality into that process. They're going through tools like process failure modes effects analysis. They're working with the production people as they're designing the process, and they get to a point where they would then validate that process prior to releasing it to ensure it will do what it's supposed to do. And then when they release it, production is responsible for operating it according to that process. But those owners, those engineers that designed the process, they own and are accountable for the performance of that process. So if a defect made it to a customer, that complaint would go back to those process owners, those people who designed that process, and they would do the root cause analysis and say, I don't know how that happened. I designed a process to be zero defect to the customer. So I must have missed something, right? And they would work it.
Right.
And literally there wouldn't be, you wouldn't see it quality involved from a quality department standpoint. I worked at Harley Davidson Motor Company for several years. I was that guy. I was the assembly process engineering manager, and I developed the processes for three assembly lines. If we shipped a defect to the customer, it was on me. If we created internal quality issues, it was on me. I did not have anyone from the quality department working for me. Quality was embedded in all that we did.
Right. So what is the role then of quality? Are they internal consultants? What are they doing? Or are they no longer there?
Well, you know, I got to be careful how I say this, because I think it becomes contentious, and a lot of people have worked a lot of years to build a career path in quality. But I really think quality management within an organization should look more like a organizational excellence consultant, where you are a subject matter expert that are helping to facilitate the creation and implementation of your quality management system, helping to facilitate the review, evaluation, and improvement of that system. Having the internal audit process, I think, is fantastic. Maybe driving the corrective action process to call amen or BS on, you know, sound corrective action. I think that's a good role. You could still own the calibration process. You could still own the overall non-conforming material management process along with engineering and production. I think there's still several things that quality management professionals can do if they integrate planning, control, and improvement requirements into design, into supply chain, into production, into contracts, program management. The quality management department would look very different, in my opinion.
Yeah, perfect. John, we've been talking for almost 50 minutes, so we're going to wind down. We have what I'd like to do is touch on one or two more topics briefly and then leave about 5 minutes for some Q&A.
Okay.
So this is also the sort of the heads up to the attendees. Start thinking about questions you'd like to ask. In a few minutes, we'll shift our attention to you and start answering those questions. And feel free to start dropping them, please, in the public chat. So, John, you've done a great job of, I think, explaining this paradigm shift, the reason why it's necessary, the value of doing it, you know, what the world looks like after making the shift. I think you've explained well how you would approach the transformation at a high level. And sort of common pitfalls that you would encounter. All that is goodness. What I'd like to tee up the next webinar, because what I'm seeing here is that the free flow of information, right, is going to become very, very important, I think, to create a sustainable operation, right? It's going to be very important that we define these KPIs, but then also measure them and can report on them freely. They have to intersect these swim lanes, right? It has to become one holistic sort of data view. So the role of analytics is slowly becoming clear to me. Maybe touch on the role of technology briefly in a transformation like this, and then we'll go into that much more deeply next webinar.
Yeah. Technology would play a huge role in this. When you start to integrate quality requirements into these processes, and then these processes have got to learn to interconnect with each other, you can envision a technology solution where the quality management system is online within this environment, such that if we're making changes to the system, I have workflow capabilities that allow the other stakeholders, the people from the other systems, to view what it is you're changing in your system to make sure that it's not impacting my system or, you know, my process, where these processes stay together. So right. Just having that technology is fantastic. And then, of course, the whole data analytics piece is really where it's at. When you talk about getting into quality 4.0 type of environment, you've got to have real-time data analytics. If you expect a process owner to own the requirements of the process and drive the process, you've got to give that process owner real-time analytics so that they can drive their process. Right. The analogy I use is being a pilot in an aircraft, and what instruments are you going to give me to help me steer and fly that aircraft? And these are the key instruments that if they go yellow or red, I'm going to immediately course correct, because I'm trying to fly that aircraft and not, you know, dive it into the ground. So having that real-time feedback to a process owner is critical, and having the technology to do that. And then in the end, learning how to optimize it all so that it's achieving the overall requirements for the system. Very few organizations are really good at optimizing. A lot of organizations sub-optimize at the expense of the system as a whole. And this is where a good technology solution can help with that.
Right. Perfect. All right. Thanks, John. Okay, so we have a few minutes left. I'd like to ask the attendees, does anyone have any questions for John based on what we discussed? We'd love to use the remaining few minutes to answer those. All right. I have one final question for you, John, and then we'll wrap it up. If you would like to give advice to quality professionals that feel like they can, they're in an organization where they're adding value, but they see a lot of unexploited potential, right? They want to do more, they want to do better, and they'd like to incorporate some of these ideas that you shared in their, you know, in their future. So they, in other words, tomorrow they wake up, they go to work, and they'd like to start incorporating some of these ideas. What advice would you give someone? Where would you start?
First of all, I would start with the individual. I think in that role, you've got to be a subject matter expert when it comes to big Q quality. So you've got to absorb and learn everything there is to learn about that. And then you're going to use that to help change the mindsets of other people that are involved. If you have an established quality management system where you're trying to take it to the next step, one of the tools that I've used is the ISO 9004:2018 tool for maturity assessment to assess the maturity of a quality management system. And basically, you could do a kind of a gap analysis on where your organization is. This maturity assessment is not set up like the clauses of the standard. It's set up more like what we're talking about, the integration of quality into processes and how well that's being managed in an organization. So this is a really good tool to use to assess where you are from a maturity level. And then you could focus on areas that maybe don't have the level of maturity that you expect, and you could build action plans to increase or improve that level of maturity. That's an excellent tool that I've used in organizations that have an established system that they think really is kind of not really adding more value to the organization.
Great. Well, thank you for that. We've come to the end of this webinar. I have a few more comments to make for everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank you for joining. We really appreciate your attendance. John, I'd like to thank you for sharing your wisdom. As always, super knowledgeable, and just you do a great job of bringing very powerful theory with just real-world examples. It always feels very sort of practical and usable. I'd like to remind everyone that part two of this webinar will focus on the other three swim lanes plus the role of technology. If you'd like to attend that, there's a registration page at the end of this session when we close off the webinar. You will be receiving a recording. And I know John loves to get questions afterwards. If you feel like there are any questions you forgot to ask, don't hesitate to ask them offline. We'll make sure John gets them, and we'll communicate. He'll communicate with you directly on the follow up. All right, and we'd love to hear your feedback. So at the end of the session, also there's a little survey. Please give us feedback. We're also a quality focused organization, always looking to improve. So please share your thoughts. All right. Thanks again, John. Thanks, everyone. And until the next time.
Thanks.